On today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast, we learn how to set up an economy in the classroom. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Jay Frosting. With me today is Shannon Nutter-Wierzbicki, who leads the My Classroom Economy program. Shannon, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Oh, thanks. No problem.
I guess I'll start with the most obvious question. What is a classroom economy?
Well, it's a simple concept, actually. It's a program by which students come into school at the beginning of the year. They all apply for a job within the classroom. So it's a similar to what classrooms are running today in terms of having, at the elementary level, I'll use that as an example, a line leader or somebody who talks about the weather or maybe somebody who turns on the computers every day. But in this classroom economy, students actually earn a salary for doing those jobs, and then they have to pay rent for their desks. So just in doing that, you create a sort of economic system in the classroom. And then in addition to sort of their salary and their rent, students can earn bonuses for good grades, for participation in class, for exhibiting specific characteristics the school or the teacher or the classroom would like to promote. And likewise, they can earn fines for not exhibiting that behavior or for missing homework, et cetera. And the students track all of that money that's coming in, that's going out, in simple sort of budgets or ledgers. And through that process, they really learn about what it takes to plan and to spend wisely and to think about budgeting and saving.
And this is something that gets laid on top of the regular classroom curriculum?
Yep, exactly. So it can integrate into any class or curriculum. And it does connect to a lot of the core standards, the common core standards that teachers use today.
Is there a set amount of time during the day that people are expected to sit down and talk about budgets and things? Or is it just something that they do at the beginning of the year and then it's just always ongoing with maybe some more infrequent check-ins?
It's something that classrooms do likely every week. Teachers can customize it to what works for them in the classroom. But most likely, teachers would be handing out, say, bonus money or things like that on a weekly basis. And then every month, the program suggests that the teachers hold a classroom auction. And the classroom auction is a place where students can really have a lot of fun and bid on items that might be for sale, for sale with their classroom economy money. And through that, they really decide, do I spend, do I save, do I buy the markers for however much they're going for in this auction, or do I save my money? And if they save up enough money, they can, quote unquote, buy the mortgage for their desk. So they don't have to pay rent anymore.
Oh, that's fun.
A little bit like Monopoly in that the kids can buy their desks. And then if they save up even more money, and so they delay gratification on whatever the interesting items in the classroom auction are, they can even buy the desk of somebody else in the classroom and earn rent.
That's pretty cool. Okay. Are there different income levels or does every job have the same salary?
No, different jobs have different salaries based on the type of work that it is, as well as sort of the responsibility level. And for certain jobs, kids are required to get a reference from a previous teacher. As you can imagine, there are some jobs like a classroom banker that require a student to be both very responsible as well as very good at math. And so a previous teacher would give a reference for that student.
You mentioned that kids can get bonuses and or pay fines depending on what the individual school has set up. I'm curious, what are some of the examples that you've found people inventing for their own classrooms?
It really is so customizable by teacher. We have some recommendations within the context of the website and the program, things like if you get an A+ on a test or a quiz, you would get a bonus of X dollars. Or if you get an A on a test or a quiz, you get a certain bonus. Maybe another teacher, not your your core teacher, but another teacher in the school commends you for great teamwork or for helping in a certain way, then you could get recognized with a bonus. But teachers can also simply, you know, have fun quizzes in their classroom, you know, sort of, hey, answer these questions, first person to answer correctly gets an extra bonus of $100 or what have you. So it's very customizable by class.
Neat. And it sounds like there's an opportunity to just invent things on the spot as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
You started off your example with elementary school. I'm guessing there are differences between the grades?
Yes, there are. So as you can imagine, in elementary school, particularly at, say, a K-1 level, kids are just learning how to do math. They're learning how to count, for that matter. So salary is literally $2 a week, and rent is $3 a month, and the jobs are very simple. And as the students get older, you know, they're doing more sophisticated things. They're also maybe budgeting for multiple items. So when you get to middle and high school, it's not just rent that kids have to think about. They're also budgeting for an electricity bill. When they get into high school, they have the option of buying desk insurance and auto insurance. And the teacher can simulate accidents to those things. And so through that, kids learn, well, if I have insurance, right, I'm covered. If I didn't have insurance, now I have to pay this additional money. And it's a gamble as to whether or not, you know, you're willing to risk not having those things. Mm. And then at high school, what we've developed is an investment simulator. And what we really wanted to do was to get kids to think about investing for the long term, because that's so hard to conceptualize. And so at the high school level, kids can open a simulated investment account. They pick a basic asset allocation between stocks and bonds. There are five allocations that the program provides, and they simply pick one. And then the simulator randomly selects years between 1926 and 2011 and then applies those actual market returns to the students' accounts every week. So every week is a simulated year. And what that does is that by the end of the school year, and we're figuring that realistically, classes can probably get 8 months of this in during the school year, the kids can see how their investments grow over the course of 32 years.
This is a lot more involved than I thought. It sounds like I'm actually pretty jealous that we didn't have anything like this in our school. And I'm glad to hear that it spans a level of like 32 years. I was just reading recently that there are, you know, whole 10-year stretches in the stock market when things are essentially flat.
Right.
But I think if you're looking at a duration of 32 years, you have a better chance of seeing some growth.
Yeah, and just experiencing what that, you know, what can really happen over the long term. Because I think that we're such a short-term society, and kids, you know, for good or ill, get caught up in that. You know, it's all about the next thing that you want to buy or the next trend or whatever it is. Mm. And we don't always plan. There's a survey. It was done in 2010 by the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. And 34% of people gave themselves a grade of C, D, or F when it comes to personal finance skills. Mm. And, you know, we really think, hey, if kids started earlier and started to get these basic, you know, core habits of financial responsibility, then, you know, maybe we have a greater chance of folks rating themselves an A+.
Okay. What would you say is the worst case scenario? Can you sort of fail this program?
It would be almost impossible, because the reality is that the program is designed that teachers, you know, teachers can customize it. Mm. If there are kids that are struggling to make rent, in terms of, you know, maybe they don't get bonuses, they're not the top students, so they're not going to get bonuses for A-pluses or for A's on tests. But the teacher can always customize other ways to get kids engaged and involved in the classroom that would help them earn money. And it's also an opportunity for some teachable moments of, hey, this is real life. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't make your rent on your house, you have to find other ways to do it. You know, maybe you have to take a second job, or maybe, you know, it leads itself to real life discussions. And of course, in that situation, then, you know, kids could contemplate what else they could do.
Does the concept of taxes ever come into play? Is it important to teach kids about contributing to the greater good?
Yep. So in grades 7 and 8, students begin paying taxes, and the taxes get a little more robust as they get older. And one of the concepts, I mean, the tax form, if you will, is a very, very simple document, but it does include a deduction for community service. And so that's something that, you know, whether a lot of schools promote community service projects internally, and the kids can deduct if they've participated in something like that.
So how was the program created and subsequently developed?
We partnered with Rafe Esquith, and Rafe is a teacher out in Los Angeles. He teaches at Hobart Elementary, and he's been teaching there since 1984, and he is just one of those fabulous teachers that every parent wishes their kids could have in school. Honestly, I was very privileged. I've spent a day in his classroom, and it is just a special place. It really is. And he has been using a program, a classroom economy program, for years, and he's written about it in some of his books. And we found out about the program through his writings, and we said, this is just a fantastic program. It is an approach to teaching financial responsibility that we agreed with in terms of building good foundational habits. And so we reached out to him and partnered with him to really take the core of his program and then expand it across K through 12.
And am I right in thinking that once this is introduced at a school, you can jump in at any grade? You don't have to start at the very first level?
Exactly. So we certainly know that not every school is going to adopt it as a whole school-wide program, that there are certain teachers who may be more or less interested in incorporating it into their classroom. And so, just as you said, right, it's beneficial if somebody starts it in fourth or fifth grade. It would be fantastic if a child had it from K through 12. Even if they had it for a year, it could teach them very valuable concepts.
And how would a teacher go about signing up for this? Is there a certain qualification they need? Do they need to convince a school administrator? Do they just download stuff from somewhere? Does it cost anything?
The program is completely free, which I know appeals to a lot of teachers out there. And the program is available at myclassroomeconomy.org. There are materials that can simply be downloaded. We don't even have a sign-up or a registration on the site because we know that alone can be a barrier to many teachers. So we have tried to make it as easy and turnkey as possible. So not only are the materials available on the site, but we have teachers' guides. We have all the papers that a teacher would need to use in the classroom. And if a teacher is at a school that really doesn't have the resources to even print it, and we certainly have talked to many teachers who are in that situation that you know, simply just don't have paper to be making copies, that they can order the program from the website, and we will print it and mail it to them.
That's wonderful. Can kids pay each other for things? Like, is there any danger of a gray or black market?
You know, they can, and we've seen, it's one of those areas that's sort of flexible by classroom or by teacher, and we have notes on the website where there may be additional modules or things that teachers are interested in doing that aren't a core part of the program, but certainly they could customize it. So we've certainly seen and heard of students paying each other to say, clean their desks, that's something that they might get checked on every week or every month in the classroom if that's something that the teacher cares about. And so kids can certainly pay each other for certain tasks. And likewise, we've heard of students that want to create their own businesses. And so kids could, you know, pay somebody for services rendered, kind of thing.
It's really interesting. So this is a nationwide American program, although I imagine it could be adapted for use in other countries. How do you guys know that you're, you know, teaching the right things?
So that's a great question. We did look at the personal finance standards developed by Jumpstart, and we have tied the program or showed where it links or fulfills those standards within the materials. We've also tied the program to the Common Core curriculum standards, you know, and that covers subjects such as English or math as well.
Well, that's all wonderful. Thank you, Shannon, for leading that program and for joining us on the show today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
That was Shannon Nutter-Wierzbitzki, the leader of My Classroom Economy. Learn more at myclassroomeconomy.org. Join us again next week for more great personal financial advice and information.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubeck, Brian J. Bush, and Luke Landis. The music is composed and performed by Mindcube. The podcast was founded by Luke Landis.